today in Rich in Relationship, we're going to talk about myths and opportunity in alimony and child support negotiations with who? A narcissist. Myth one is you can change them. You can reform them. You can enlighten them. You can help them. Myth two is the legal system will see through the narcissist and come to my rescue. Let's talk about myth number three. This is a big one. Myth number three is once you divorce, you won't have to deal with them anymore. You just settle quickly because you won't have to deal with them anymore. Once it's divorced, it'll be over. You'll be living separately. And I'm going to tell you, this is a huge myth. Welcome to another episode of Rich in Relationship. And I'm actually super excited about what we're going to cover in this episode. Like, in a way, I haven't been excited in a while. We're going to talk about myths and opportunity in alimony and child support negotiations with who? A narcissist, right? And why am I excited about this topic? Truthfully, everyone believes they are divorcing a narcissist, and many people are, right? And we're going to talk a little bit about what does that mean? What is a narcissist, really? Or what does it mean to be narcissistic in the divorce process? We're going to especially talk about what are the myths of defeating, converting, winning with the narcissist. And we're going to talk about what is the opportunity, right? And that's the thing I get really excited about, is the opportunity. All right, so the narcissist. Look, if we're honest, we've all got a little narcissist in us, right? A narcissist is someone who thinks about themselves. And societally, we've been taught that thinking about ourselves is not always such a good thing. We've been taught that it's important to sacrifice for others to, what's that thing on Star Trek that they said over and over, the good of the one must bow to the good of the many. There are a lot of societal messages about this. And so when people do show up as focusing primarily on their own well-being, particularly in a way that appears destructive to us, they automatically become bad, evil narcissists. And they may actually be bad, evil narcissists. I'm not taking that away from you. I'm just telling you that because of our culture's view on self-sacrifice and higher ideals, when we see someone looking out for themselves in a way that appears negative to our well-being, we go to, that's not a good person. That's a bad, they're narcissistic. And what I want to tell you is that in the divorce process, because divorce is contentious, because there's so much conflict, negative, destructive conflict around and in divorce, we all go to being just a little narcissistic. And we do it in the name of defending our kids. We do it in the name of defending ourselves, right? We're going to get them. We're going to show them they're wrong and we're right. And it is exactly that mindset, that point of view, that come from that led to the divorce in the first place for many of us. For many of us, it's about, I'm right, you're wrong. And the other person is thinking the same thing, by the way. They're thinking they're right and we're wrong. And that's where destructive conflict blossoms and grows. I do a ton of work with people helping them to dismantle the destructive conflict so they don't actually have to get divorced. I do a ton of work with people who are divorced or getting divorced, helping them dismantle the destructive conflict so that they can parent together in a way that feels effective. But that destructive conflict is grounded in basic narcissism. I'm going to win. You're going to lose. Now, narcissism, real life narcissism, the diagnosis narcissism, is a lot more than I'm going to win, you're going to lose. So let's be clear about what that is. Real life diagnosable narcissism is not only I'm going to win, you're going to lose, it's I'm right and you're wrong. It's I'm not only am I so right, but I know what's best for you. Not only am I so right, but I know the truth, even if you think you know what it is. In fact, the truth that I know is not the truth that you know. And let me tell you all the ways that my truth is actually your truth, even though you think it's not. Because you think it's not because you're deluded. You think it's not because you're mentally ill. You think it's not because you just don't know what I know. That's the come from of diagnosable narcissism. And there are levels of that. There's very destructive narcissism where the other person is being obliterated. There's sort of basic narcissism 101, which is just involves some gaslighting and getting my way. And then on the scale of narcissism, let's say one is Mother Teresa and 10 is destructive narcissism. We all, as human beings, can all fall on this scale at one time or another. And I would say probably more times than none. Because after all, how many of us are living like Mother Teresa, right? If she's a one, if she's totally not narcissistic. And I would argue, by the way, that even Mother Teresa, she has enlightened narcissism. Enlightened narcissism is, I won't feel good if other people are suffering. And so I'm going to dedicate my life to ending the suffering of others. It's what I do here at Richer in Relationship, by the way, right? My mission is to help people like you end destructive conflict and engage in positive communication so that you and your children are more joyful and resilient or happier, have a higher sense of well-being, feel better. And that comes out of my own childhood and the things that didn't work for me as a kid. And it comes out of my own divorce and the things that didn't work when I got divorced and the things that did work when I got divorced. And it comes out of my current marriage of almost 25 years and the positives out of that. All of the, and my time as a social worker and getting certified as a professional coach and becoming a trained mediator and become certified as a hypnotherapist and as a mental and emotional release practitioner, all that sort of feeds into that mission. That's enlightened narcissism. Enlightened narcissism is I feel most fulfilled when I'm helping other people, not sacrificing myself for other people. Either. I want to be really clear. That's something different. We'll talk about that in another episode. But when my battery is 100% and I can show up for other people 100% and help them be 100%, I'm fulfilled and happy. And so that's narcissism because I'm fulfilled and happy, right? That's what narcissists are all about. They're about being happy. Maybe they're not so much about being fulfilled. And that's an argument for therapists and psychiatrists and psychoanalysts, not for this podcast. You're listening to this podcast because you have someone on the other side who's more like a 7, 8, 9, or even a 10 on that scale, not a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which is where most of humanity falls, or even a 6, right? They're on the higher end of the scale. You're listening to this podcast because you've got some misunderstandings about how narcissists work and what you can do. And so let's debunk the 3 primal myths of dealing with a narcissist. Now, many of you have moved on from this myth, but it's still clinging. Myth 1 is, you can change them. You can reform them. You can enlighten them. You can help them. And while it is fully possible for any human being to change, I have to believe that as someone who believes in the potential of humanity. While it is fully possible that can happen, it's highly unlikely that it's going to happen by you helping them directly. In fact, you're probably getting divorced because you tried so hard to help them, or maybe you're getting divorced because you're so sick of them fixing you all the time, fixing your wings that aren't broken and breaking them in the process. You're so tired of them telling you that they know better. You're so tired of them invalidating who you are, not just what you think. That's why you're divorcing them. And in the back of your mind, there might be a thought, this divorce, it's going to wake them up. This divorce, they'll come around. And that's not an unusual thought. Really, most of us, we don't want to let go of our commitment, of a covenant of our marriage, whatever that word means to you. Most of us take marriage as something sacred. I don't mean in religious terms. I mean to ourselves. When we go to say I do, it represents one of the highest commitments we can make to another human being. And we are loath to break that commitment. And many of us, even in pulling the trigger on divorce, hope and pray that other person will change. I myself have done this. At 5 years into my marriage, my first marriage, asked for a divorce, hoping and praying that I wouldn't have to follow through with it because I was never going to do to my kids what my parents did to me. I had a little bit of a victim thing going on then. And I remember the despair that I felt with the pain that my kids were in and the despair that I felt, the pain that I was putting her through. And she begged me. She said she could change. She would be different. And I decided I was going to believe her. And guess what happened 5 years later? 5 years later, I was pulling that trigger again, and I did not back down because I learned that I could not reform or change that other person. And that is particularly true when you're talking about a narcissist. They are so set in that who they are is right, correct, and good. They're so set in that they are the golden child. They are the chosen one, and everyone else is meant to serve them, support them, or acknowledge them and validate them. And they have married you because in some way, shape, or form, you did acknowledge and validate them for a while there. You are not going to change them. There's no amount of love that's going to change them. There's no amount of reasoning that's going to change them. There's no amount of willpower. There's no amount of threatening, no amount of joking, cajoling, and no amount of divorce that's going to change them. You do not have that. None of us has the power to change another person. The person I most revere and respect was a man in a book known as Jesus. And he never tried to change anyone else. He did all kinds of things. He was said to have walked on water, it says in the Word. It says that he healed people, but he never tried to change people. He took people as they were. When he was met with hypocrisy, he said, "You're a hypocrite. Change or die." They go, "See you later," and he'd walk away, right? Whether you believe that is a true story or not, there's a core message in that, that no matter, even if you are reputed to be the Son of God, you do not have the power to change people. Right? I want you to get that. You don't have that power. It's a myth. Dissipate it. Let it go. Myth two, and this is related to myth one. Myth two is the legal system will see through the narcissist and come to my rescue. I'm working with a client right now who's got a narcissist in their life. And one of the first myths that we needed to dispel, one of the big shocks, was that the narcissist they were divorcing was highly effective at enrolling the judge in their story, at enrolling the forensic psychologist in their story, at enrolling the forensic accountant in their story, even at enrolling my client's own attorneys in their story, up to a point. And that's because narcissists are usually naturally charismatic. They're experts at sensing how to sugarcoat, frame, prepare their perspective with supporting evidence in a way that makes sense to people in authority. So the system does not automatically see through the narcissist. In fact, sometimes the system never sees through the narcissist. And if you really want the system to see through the narcissist, the only way to do it is to document their dishonesty, their being out of integrity, document, and then you need to present whoever it is with the documentation. They won't take you at your word. But if you document, you can begin to chip away at that golden glow that the narcissist creates for themselves. So it is a myth that the system will automatically see it. Now, I will say this. Many judges have seen many narcissists, and over time, they will come to recognize what's going on there. But they're also conditioned to believe everybody is in it for themselves. You remember when I told you about divorce? Everybody's in it for themselves. Everybody's in survival mode. Everybody's in the concentration camp trying to survive. Everybody's trying to get theirs in divorce court. And the judge is the commandant who decides who's going to get what. And so, unlike a concentration camp, The judge is attempting to be even-handed. The judge actually cares and needs to assume that everyone is manipulating him first or her first. All right, let's talk about myth number three. This is a big one. Myth number three is once you're divorced, you won't have to deal with them anymore. Yeah, just settle quickly because you won't have to deal with them anymore. Once it's divorced, it'll be over. You'll be living separately. And I'm going to tell you, this is a huge myth. I've had clients come to me after they got divorced, after they got their own apartment, after they got their own six-figure job to say, Rich, I'm worried about my child. I'm worried that my child is becoming like them. I don't know what to do to protect my child when they're with them. I don't know what to do to protect my child from being made less than or a scapegoat. I don't know what to do to protect my child from being made a golden child and becoming like them. I don't know what to do. And so once you divorce, if you don't deal with them, you basically are surrendering your children into the hands of the narcissist to be shaped and formed. And so once the divorce is over, it's vital that you are conscious and cognizant of the risks and conscious and cognizant of what you're putting in. And the reason for this is your children are going to pick the emotional clothes, the behavioral clothes, the strategic clothes that they want to wear. They're going to try on the narcissist's behavioral, strategic, emotional clothes. They're going to try on your behavioral, strategic, emotional clothes. And so you want to be really careful about what you're putting out there. Don't think, oh, I'm so good and they're so bad, and then behave in ways that looks like their behavior, even though your motivation might be different. You're going to want to be super clean. And that brings me to the opportunity, all right? The real opportunity here when you're divorcing that narcissist and you're looking for alimony and child support or anything else is getting that you are the shining light for your child if you choose to be. And the only way for you to be that shining light is for you to do the work on yourself. The only way for you to be that shining light is to, I've got five steps that anyone who works with me take. Oh, so well, let's go over them really quickly. All right, step one is let go. Gotta let go of all the hurt and the pain, the anger, the resentment, the fear, the sadness, the blame, all of that. Because all it's doing is weighing you down. It isn't hurting them. It isn't punishing them. And you know what? You can forgive. You can forgive yourself. You can forgive them. You can let go without making them right. You can let go without making yourself wrong. You can let go without validating them. You can let go of all of that. You don't even have to go to them with it. This is work that you do on yourself. I've helped a lot of people to let go. There are four steps to changing. And the first is to let go of the old stuff. Because without letting go of the old stuff, it's like wearing rose-colored glasses. You only see everything rosy. Or maybe you're wearing poop-colored glasses and you only see everything poopy. Got to let go. Got to take those glasses off and see things, see yourself and see them as you are. Step two is you're going to take a stance of accountability. All right, this is a deep self-examination. And in the stance of accountability, you're going to act as if you really are responsible for everything that happened. You're going to act as if you're God. You made these things happen so you could learn certain lessons. What are the lessons you need to learn? And that's the other part of the letting go process, right? We can't really let go until we learn the lessons. Old emotions, limiting beliefs, these were all stuck points in our lives where we didn't learn the lesson that we needed to learn. And so we are still living in the past, holding on to those things and recreating them again and again. We got married to a narcissist, not because we're some poor innocent creature that just got sucked into their web, though that may be true. We got married to a narcissist because they looked and felt like something familiar from our childhood. Maybe you had a father or a mother who was very protective of you and who really was in your corner. And the narcissist kind of felt like that. Maybe when you were with that parent, you even gave up a little of who you are for that sense of safety. And when you were with the narcissist, you gave up a lot of who you were. whatever it is, something about you, something about your childhood, your past, who you are, made that feel like a fit. And you're getting out of it because you realize, oh, this is really not the fit that I thought it was. There's something icky here, something different here. The sense of accountability helps you to learn the lesson, identify the lessons you need to learn, so that when you are finished with that narcissist, you can be that shining light for your child. You can start to clean and strip away the qualities that made you a fit for that relationship and start to become a leader, start to become a person of confidence, start to become someone who knows who they are and knows what they want, someone who lives on purpose, someone who lives on mission. Next step, once you've cleaned house, is we're going to create a strategy moving forward. And we're going to do that by using our intimate knowledge of who they are and how they, the narcissist, came to be who they are. Right? Now that we know what our flaws are that hooked into them, we're going to really understand how did they become the way they are. And we're going to get that really they would have taken anyone who was willing to allow them to, and they would have tried to mold them and shape them just like they tried to shape and mold us. And that's because of the way they grew up. They probably grew up with a narcissistic parent who groomed them. They are creations of their own environment, trapped in their own little world. It's what they did had nothing to do with who we are. Even though their overarching desire is to control us and for us to submit to them, that's not about who we are. It's about their need to feel better than at the expense of someone else. And that has to do with the way they grew up. And once we understand that, once we can even have a little empathy for them, we can feel badly for them and their childhood that led them to live in this narrow little freaking box of a life, which is what narcissism is. It's unbelievably narrow. The possibilities are so small. So we're going to do this work because we don't want our kids to live in that box. And we don't want them to live in the box we were in when we were married to them. We're going to blow it out of the waters through those first three steps. The fourth step is once we understand who they are and what makes them tick, we're going to create a strategy for making our kids feel safe. What are the principles and values we're going to teach them that will stand up even in the face of the narcissist gaslighting? We're going to create a strategy for how are we going to get the narcissist to feel like what we know is best for the kids is their idea and that we don't maybe buy into it, right? Because they want to win at all costs. So part of the strategy is we have to find a way to give them ideas, have them think that they're theirs, and have them think that they're imposing them on us in some way, shape, or form. That sounds terrible, right? It sounds demeaning and icky, but it's not. It's about how to deal with someone who's really ill and protect your children in the process. We're not making them do something we don't want to do. We're giving them what they want. They want to feel like they're winning. They want to feel like they have original ideas. They want to feel like they're leading us, making us go along with them. And as long as these are ideas that work for our children and that we agree with, we can pretend not to agree with them so that what is best for our children happens, right? And this is the kind of the prime goal. And the fifth is we all need help and support in driving this kind of change. If we had the playbook, we wouldn't have gotten into the relationship in the first place. That's why so many people have come to me for support. So I'm going to encourage you. I'll give you a free call. I give them out 100 different ways. And plenty of people schedule a call with me, take what they need, and move on. No obligation. Because when I'm talking to people, I'm on mission, right? That's what I signed up for. I signed up to help people. When I'm helping people, I'm on mission. All right, so the fifth step is support, not just calling me, but it might be your rabbi, your priest, your yogi, your friends who have been divorced or are getting divorced, support groups. It might be your family, anyone that you feel can uplift you. It is not your children. Even if they're adult age, they are not part of your support system. Your children are always your children. That is a boundary that you maintain. You never talk stuff about the other parent to your children. You only speak to the positives of them. Your parent? Son, your parent is charismatic, driven, visionary. Yeah, maybe sometimes a little short-sighted, but we're human. That happens. That's as close as you get to talk badly. If they come to you and say, they're narcissistic, they're always putting me down, then you give them tools for managing that without finger pointing. That's part of the process, the steps, remember? Strategies. Okay, that is the opportunity that you have. You're divorcing this narcissistic personality. You are not going to change them. The court is not going to stick up for them and see through them right away. And after the divorce, they're still not going to change. And so your opportunity is to work on and change yourself, become bigger than the situation. Embrace your biggest, most fullest potential as a human being. And always have the well-being of your children on the front burner. I'm going to tell you, there's a humility to giving an idea to someone, having them come back as if it's theirs, acting as if you're resistant to it. There's a humility to it, and allowing them to take the lead after they have gaslit you, bullied you, and belittled you for years. There is a humility to that. But you won't know until you try it. All right, so as always, we invite you to follow, subscribe this podcast. We're going to be doing a couple of more episodes on narcissists and the divorce process. And we've got some legal experts floating around this month in the podcast. So stay tuned to Rich in Relationships. Share it with other people. And thank you for listening.
Grab a free call with me on our website,